have an expert in digital journalism and mobile journalism, but we're still struggling with some of the more basic parts of technology to get everything in place for you to enjoy what I think will be a great presentation. I must say it's been 12 years since I last saw Stephen Quinn do a lecture. It was in Brisbane at the AOR conference. But I've been following his work, and you should know that he's a world-renowned expert on mobile journalism. So Egan and other Australians have traveled around the world to teach newsrooms around the world how to start working with Mojo. So it's a great pleasure to have you here, Stephen Quinn, and I know you will introduce yourself a little bit more thoroughly.
Sure.
But let's give you a welcome and applause.
Thank you. You can all hear me okay? Yeah. It's very rare to get a full before us. So who's here? Students? Okay. Teachers? Okay. Industry people, I guess. Okay. Right. Anybody? I miss anybody? Okay. So I'm going to talk about, and these are just my thoughts. Yeah. I travel a lot. I visit a lot of newsrooms. I talk to a lot of journalists. And I play with a lot of tools. And so you're going to get my thoughts. They may or may not be accurate, but I think I can justify what I'm saying. So very briefly, I spent 20 years as a reporter, producer, editor in 5 countries. I became an academic for 15 years. I fled the academy in 2011, went back to journalism, and now I work part-time for Christiania's Vesterdal School, and I run a small, insignificant consulting company. But I've published 30 books, and I've worked out just over 250 presentations in 40 countries in recent years, mostly about where digital media is going. And I've trained these people called Mojos, and I'll explain what a Mojo is, in 19 countries. But this is for the students among us. There's a phrase in English to start with a bang. So I introduce you to Silas Bang from Denmark. So this is a job application he made to one of the Danish media companies.
Den brandfarlige kanal er en oplagt god historie fra de sociale medier. Vi dækker den i første omgang udmærket, men hvor er opfølgningen? Video med den brændte og en forklaring på det brandfarlige kanal. De ekstra visninger løb til 2 med. De sociale medier er en oplagt jagtmark til gode historier og tendenser. De skal ikke bare findes, de skal også dækkes journalistisk og visuelt. Til det er mobilen et genialt værktøj, som mange flere i organisationen skal lære bedre at kende, end de gør i dag. Jeg er en stærk visuel journalist, som er hjemmevandt i Photoshop og Premiere Pro, men jeg foretrækker billige og geniale apps som LumaFusion, Snapseed og Apples Clips, der selv sætter tekst på, mens man taler. Brugt i virale historier som den om kæmpeisen på Ibex Strandvejen, eller en hurtig montage over VB's mange kamera de seneste år, lavet på 20 minutter på mobilen. Perfekt til Facebook, som elsker video. Det skal vi have mere af, sammen med bedre og flere lives og animeret indhold. Og vi skal lære af hinanden på tværs af medier. Instagram er til de bedste fotos og de korte, vertikale historier. Men vi skal have en skarpere strategi, og det skal være nemmere at publicere til mediet. Det har jeg nogle værktøjer til. Derudover skal vi have en koncernstrategi for Twitter, og være klar til at hoppe på eller kassere nye sociale medier. På min blog både anmelder og lister jeg digitale værktøjer og mobilapps. Jeg har flere forslag til, hvad der skal tilføjes avisens værktøjskasse, og har 2 gange i foråret undervist i mobiljournalistik for update.
Jeg tror, jeg kan bruge mine evner bedre, hvis jeg får lov til at blive højere og friere og synes, at medier.
So, this is a job application, 2-minute video, no CV, just a phone number. He started 1 week later. Classic example of show, don't tell. I was just trying to get your attention. Okay, so this thing called Mojo, mobile as in mobile phone, mobile as in moving around, show journalism, it'll get you a job. And I'll prove this to you later on. So Mojo could be your unique selling point. What do I mean by Mojo? Literally everything is done with a smartphone. They're often an iPhone because at the moment it's the best tool. So it's possible to make a broadcast quality video in under a day, half a day. So it's about storytelling. Some examples, Oscar nomination for a feature film. I'm sorry, this. Tangerine, Soderbergh got on record saying he will only use an iPhone for filming from now on. I'll show you the movies of Conrad Mess, who started using an iPhone 4, made 11 short films, and is now in Hollywood making a multi-million-dollar movie. The BAFTA, Oscar, and Special Jury Prize in 2013 for a documentary was made partly with an iPhone. Bentley are doing all the advertising on an iPhone and editing on an iPhone. NGOs like Witness, some of you may remember Genesis, funded by Peter Gabriel. NGOs basically capturing examples of bad treatment of human beings on mobile phones. So it's being used all around the world. I would suggest to you it also offers some very strong new business models for television. So I'm going to introduce you to, some of you may know the term OTT, over the top. It means film, TV, delivered via the internet without requiring anybody to pay for it. And the Boston Consulting Group last week said that 30,000, so 30 billion US dollars will move away from traditional TV to this form of OTT in a couple of years. Earlier this month, a very famous Hollywood producer announced he just raised $1 billion to invest in buying content that would be delivered only via the mobile phone. Facebook launched Facebook Watch formally this year with a budget of about the same, $1,000 million. Amazon Prime Video Direct allows people to upload their content directly into Prime and sell it by a range of business models. Much of that content is being made with a mobile phone. So this is just something to consider. We accept that the business model of newspapers is considered to be in trouble because of this thing with the internet. It may be happening to traditional television at the same time. So just to continue about Mojo, basically everything done with the iPhone and a handful of apps. Most expensive app there is about 300 Norwegian crowns. And the new development is my new favourite toy. Broadcast quality camera on the front, controlled. I'm not allowed to fly it in here, so I can't take it off, but it's ready to go. I just have to press start. And what's on the camera, you guys there, see? So fly the drone, get pictures. In the country where I live, to hire a helicopter for television news is roughly 10,000 Norwegian crowns for 1 hour. One of those is about half that price. You can buy it, fly it, And there are, I'll give you examples of lots of people who are making a good living selling video to websites, production houses, and so forth, shot with a drone. Okay. Some recent events, and Asia seems to be leading the charge. So New Delhi TV, all of its TV is done with Mojo equipment, with Mojos. The daily paper Pratham Alar in Bangladesh, all its reporters are now Mojos. The Pakistani television network GEO TV, all of its reporters are now Mojos. I'll show you examples from where I used to work with China Daily, making television programs for the web. And just to add one, Independent Media, which I think is the biggest or second biggest media company in South Africa, is required all its print journals to become Mojos. And a classic example is my mate David Clark in Hong Kong. And I'll show you that this is just a promo video on his drone and phone website.
We're chasing down Hong Kong's five best one day bike rides. Have a look at this view behind me. It is just absolutely stunning.
Presenter is the multimedia director for Hong Kong Asia. Gets a big salary. And I met him a month ago. We've known each other for a long time. And he said he could quit anytime he wanted to and just make a living from shooting drone and phone. But he likes doing other things. They have their own dedicated YouTube channel. And if you go to it, there's an explainer video that tells you how he does it. It's really kind of cool. I don't have time to show you. Why is Mojo happening? Well, I think there are two primary reasons. One is the economics of media, basically driven by saving money. And the other one is massive technological change. So this is an advertisement I found from an American newspaper some 18, 19 years ago. All of these pieces of equipment, audio recorder, tape recorder, camera, computer, all now in the device sitting in front of most of you on the table. And of course, with 5G coming by probably 2020, you expect more potential change. Do you remember the Linotype? Were you around with the Linotype?
Yes.
Yeah. This was a machine in the days of hot metal where they used molten lead to make the slugs. I'm so old. I won't mention who else in the room. I'm so old. My job was to go and collect the proofs in this cavern of a room with these 30 or 40 of these things making this massive noise. And this was how newspapers were produced using manual typewriters. Anybody use a manual typewriter? And an analog phone, you know, zip, took 3 minutes to make an international call, just to get a connection. 200 years, this got killed off by this. That's a silicon chip in the jaws of a termite. In Australia, we have a big problem with termites, little insects that eat houses. So I'm going to take you back about 12 years. Reuters are said to have been the originator of Mojo with their Mojo kit in 2007, but...
Hello, Wednesday, September 5th, 2007. I'm Joanne, and this is Rocket Boom. Today we hear again from Rocket Boom film correspondent Ruud Ellendorp. Ruud followed Evans Wafula, who reports from Nairobi using his cell phone.
Anyway, so even though Reuters claimed to be doing it, Evans Wafula in Africa was doing it, and this slightly chubby guy was doing it in Australia, and the BBC was doing it. Robert Hall, when I worked for the BBC a long time ago, Robert Hall was one of my reporters. He's keen on technology, and he did the first, in September of 2007, did the first Mojo with a Nokia.
It's an HSBC, rather, bank branch, which is on Winchester Road, one of the main roads running through...
pretty crappy, you'd agree. Nobody would run that on television now. But that was high-tech in 2007. So we've got these two things happening, Moore's Law with computers, Huang's Law. You heard of Huang's Law? Named after Professor Huang, the founder and president of Samsung for many, many years. Moore's Law says that the brains in your computer double in capacity every roughly 18 months. Huang's Law says the brains in your mobile phone double in capacity roughly every 9 months. So we've got radical technical change. I'll let you read that. Now, Kurzweil predicted in 2011 that what fits in your pocket now will fit inside a blood cell in 25 years. Now, I don't expect to be around to check that. You guys can make a note in your diaries to make sure, to see if you got it right. Okay, so this is how we traditionally get visuals for TV, outside broadcast vans, VJs with handheld cameras, and of course lots of citizens getting their... sitting in their free pictures, the citizen journalist. It got a lot of publicity in June of 2009 when this young woman was shot dead by in Tehran by an army sniper. The video was put on YouTube and it won a Polk Award, which is a big deal, American television award. Now, I can show it to you. It's absolutely gruesome. I can skip it. Anybody like to watch it? Run through about 10 seconds. Are you willing to watch it? Okay, I'm going to count to three and play. If you don't want to watch it, close your eyes. That's enough. Shows the power of images. Ghastly image, but it had a big impact upon the way people reacted to the military in that country. So just to repeat, if you're a student, I would suggest you Mojo is your unique selling point. I taught at the University of Missouri back in April 2010. They gave me two senior students, Erica on the left, Ryan on the right. I told them about this thing called Mojo. I don't know if how much you know about American television, but traditionally, if you get a job in television when you graduate in America, you work for some small channel in a town of 5,000. And then maybe when you get to 30, you move to a bigger city. And when you're in your 40s, you might get to a capital city, and if you're really good, you get to go to New York or Washington or Los Angeles. New York's the biggest market. Erica went straight from Missouri to NBC because she was a Mojo trainer. She could teach Mojos. Brian chose to go and live in South Africa. So what else is happening is because of the amazing speed of Mojo. So we did a lot of research even back in then to prove that it's faster and cheaper than traditional television. So welcome to the Mojo revolution, evolution. What's that number? Number of mobile phones worldwide. So there are plenty of people out there with a mobile phone, most of which have a camera. Yeah? What's this number? That's the number of smartphone users in this country. So the point is, most people have got a mobile phone. Most mobile phones have a camera on it. So if you want to make video, there's a lot of competition out there. So how do you make yours stand out? It has to be quality. How do you get quality? And it has to be creative as well. How do you get those things? I'm sorry, just a little promotion. I think it's about ethics and training as well. This is great equipment, but unless you are trained how to use it, you're wasting your time. I push for the iPhone. At the moment, it's the only smartphone that gives you two video editing tracks. If you want to make decent video, you want to make quality video, you need at least two editing tracks. The KiniMaster Pro is available for the Android, for some Android devices, but it's got a lot of problems. You can't have full HD. You've got to pay a fee to remove the watermark, and you've got to pay to get a second edit track. So at the moment, the iPhone's the tool to use if you want to do Mojo.
The
And why is editing important? It's because there's so much stuff going on the web. You've got to find a way to make yours stand out. And generally, editing is one of the things that produces quality. So if you're a photographer, your photo editor improves the quality of your photo. If you're a reporter, your copy editor improves the quality of your copy. If you're a video person and you know how to edit yourself, you can make a better quality video, I think. So when I teach it, I break it into six parts. My argument is that we have this thing called traditional television, which we're familiar with as a concept, as a way of doing television. A newsreader does an introduction, and then a package by a reporter, usually about a minute and a half, with a sign-off at the end. Yeah. So you could do that style of Mojo TV, but you could do a whole other range of kinds of this little device allows you to do incredible things with a bit of training. So I won't show you, but there are lots of styles. If you're interested, you can go to my website, and I've got 300 or so examples of videos. I don't know why I put those in, they're leftovers from something else. How much? Dirt cheap. Add a zero, so for about 11,000 Norwegian crowns, you've got a kit that will allow you, it's about roughly 10 to 1, 10 crowns to 1 pound. So about £1,100 gets you a broadcast kit. So you can set up as a student, you can set up and become an independent production house with appropriate training. Certainly cheaper than an outside broadcast stand, and certainly smaller than TV gear. That's the kit from a television crew in Hong Kong without the camera. So the iPhone weighs, my iPhone weighs 120 grams, that camera weighs 4.5 kilograms, which is why it's got a long strap and seems like it looks like this. And the other bag is all the other peripherals. So it's much lighter. It means we talk about the economy of media. If a media company needs to send someone, a journalist, to cover an event in another country, a four-person crew, three-person crew, two-person crew, or one-person crew, which is going to require fewer airfares, fewer salaries, fewer hotel rooms, less insurance. Yeah. So the economics are pushing this as well. If newsrooms are trying to save money. So one way is to get single-person crews. It puts a lot of stress on the journalist, of course, because you have to do everything. And that's an equation that also has to be balanced out. And now I'm going to talk about drones, because I like drones. You're going to have to put up with what I like. So that's my My first drone, I still keep photographs of it. It flew away. I let a young friend of mine, stupid on my part, I let him borrow it without supervision. It took off. A gust of wind took it away. We never found it. And it was only after that I discovered that it's not covered by household insurance. So if you have a drone, you need to get insurance. So this new drone is insured. So, silly example of putting drone footage into a story.
The tiny village of Camembert is famous worldwide for its cheeses, and it's only when you see it from the sky you realise how lush the surrounding land.
So that's a 2 minute 39 second video with 17 seconds of pretty pictures at the beginning, shot with a drone. In IK, I've got a drone department now. Anybody doing an internship in IK? This is the guy who runs the drone department. Gave me a tour last year. That's the propeller for the drone they used to use to carry the big 12 kilogram broadcast camera. Now they're using this is a Mavic Pro. It's about twice the size of my little Spark. But the cameras are the same. It's what happens with technology, that the equipment gets cheaper and smaller as a general rule. And of course you have to have batteries. That's the battery room where they keep all their batteries. So China Global Television, which I have done some work with when they were called China Central Television, partners with a company in Africa called Eye in the Sky, and this company uses drones to get very lovely pictures. Think you could get this close to a giraffe with a helicopter? So, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are limitations of drones, particularly in really windy conditions, but you can get incredible pictures with them. And you live in such a splendidly beautiful country in terms of mountains and fjords, and that you could possibly make a living if you wanted to, willing to fly a drone selling pictures. Just a thought. So I've come up, usually start asking these questions now. How could you use these tools I'm talking about? So you can make television commercials. So if you're in the commercial side of media, you could, instead of So you could make a commercial with a mobile phone for a fraction of the price of traditional commercials. If you want to work in PR, you could do online promotional videos. My students, when I taught in China, after Evo came to visit in June of 2011, we set up NUTS, the Nottingham University television station, great name, NUTS, and we got some money from the European Union to make two three-minute documentaries about pollution in China. If you've been to China, you know there's a big problem with pollution in China. And we put those mini documentaries on an EU-funded website. Conrad Ness, you've got to meet Conrad Ness. This is the guy I told you about, one of my heroes. So I'll show you, these are the videos he's made and the awards he's got. So I'll show you the shortest. Before I show it, I'll tell you about him. So Conrad Ness, a Spanish guy, mid-30s, struggling to find a job. He's married. He says to his wife, "Well, it's your anniversary is coming up. What would you like?" And she says, "I'd really love an iPhone." So he cobbled together what money he had and bought her an iPhone 4S. So that's some years ago. And she was overjoyed. And then 2 days later, he said, "Do you mind if I borrowed the phone for a few days?" He got together with some friends and made a movie called The Fixer. It runs for 7 minutes. If we have time, I'll show it. It's really cool. And it's won numerous awards. Shot entirely on an iPhone. Actors were just some friends of his. Conrad Ness wrote the script. It's won every possible short movie award there is. Total budget, $400. And since then, he's made a whole lot more. And to save time, I'll show you the shortest one. It's a script of one word. Tidings. Tidings. Need to spend for special effects. A small plug for a book. Have we got time for me to show a couple of other videos?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'll go back and we have one more hour.
One more hour? Oh, I'm located. Okay, I'll show you. Okay, I'll show you this one by...
We can take a small leg break, 15 minutes. We usually take it after...
I can show you stacks and stacks of stuff. I was trying to be brief. Okay, so here's my friend DJ Clark. I'll just show you this, who explains how he does drone photo. There he is, up above Hong Kong, with his sweat rag and his mobile phone.
So my name is DJ Clark, and I'm a multimedia director at China Daily Asia. So the idea of Drone and Phone was to try to connect with the general Hong Kong public and tourists coming into Hong Kong who were interested in outdoor activities. I had a passion about it because I like outdoor stuff, and I just arrived. I wanted to explore the city, and this seemed like a great idea. Now, originally, it was going to be a full show where I'd shoot with my normal cameras, and the drone was going to be a part of that. I certainly wasn't thinking about the phone. But as things sort of developed, I went from a big camera and said, well, this is really heavy to carry. Can I get something a bit lighter? And then I thought, well, why not just use my phone? I mean, it's with me. It's also something that anyone else can do. It's something that takes away the mystery of filmmaking. That, you know, if I'm doing something that is in the pocket of most people, I think that just kind of makes it a little bit more accessible. So when I'm walking, I like to carry these two pouches. Firstly, I keep my phone in this one here on the outside pocket, and I also have a charger here. Now, charging is like the one thing that I have to do all the time. I'm almost charging continuously because when I'm using the phone to shoot video and also with the drone, it's eating into my power. I use it also for GPS. I use it for pretty well everything. So that goes in there, and then I have a little wire here, so that's connected. I connect my phone to my charger, and it just sits in there all the time. And the wire is long enough for me to be able to pick it up and still shoot a little bit, and then put it back down again. In this pouch, I'm carrying my gimbal. There's a wire in there as well. The gimbal allows me to attach. So my phone just drops in on the gimbal here, charging it up, and now you can see with the gimbal I can get a really nice steady shot up and down. I can also do pieces to camera and walk as I'm talking, and it keeps a nice steady shot as I go.
I'll slip in a small commercial if anybody. There's a Swedish company just released a brand new gimbal called Flow Motion, FLOW. MOTION. It's probably going to be two-thirds the price of the DJI one that Dave Clark uses, and it's significantly better. I've tested one, and I bought one. It's been delivered to me in the UK where I live. I'm here for another couple more weeks, so when I get back, my new Flow Motion gimbal waiting. I'll show you a video about it in a little while. It's an impeccable piece of kit, and just means you don't need a tripod. You can do everything handheld and get incredibly still images. So I love gimbals. The combination of gimbal and drone. Oh. And I mean, when you think about how cheap this is relative to what it used to cost, I'll give you a small example. I worked as a reporter and producer at ITN in the mid to late 1980s. ITN is like TV2, the opposition to the BBC. We had four-person crews. Eventually, we lost one. But we still had a cameraman, because you had to be a man, muscular man, to carry these. And we had a separate sound person. And over time, and eventually, the camera and the sound were joined. So we had two-person crews, a reporter-producer, and cameraman, sound person, usually drove the van as well. It was in flight, so I didn't have to drive. The camera cost £100,000, what's that? A million Norwegian crowns in 1986. You added 25% on top of that for peripherals, tripod, spare batteries, spare tapes, insurance, because we always kept dropping and had to get a new one. And so imagine £1.2 million Norwegian crowns in 1986. What's that worth now? That's a ballpark figure, £2 million? Yeah? You get the same quality pictures with that. So add a gimbal to get stability. So, but my point in all this is it's not about the kit. It's about the brains and the hands. The brain that controls the hands that controls the kit. So it's about training. It's about education. It's about visual literacy, about knowing what is a great picture. And then finding a subject that is interesting. So this guy, he's grabbed the outdoor market in Hong Kong. He gets offers from all around the world to travel to make videos about walks and trails and mountain biking and stuff like that. So that he now owns this And all he's using is a drone and a phone and a bit of a kit.
So this is nice, and you can also see in the show, let me just turn this around a little bit, sometimes I'm coming down and then moving up and over, and this gives me a nice little movement in the shot to add a little bit of cinematography into what I'm doing. So this sits in my bag. I put it out, not all the time, but occasionally it sits here, so it's very easy to come out. Also in this bag, I keep a couple of lenses here that I can snap on. These are clip-on lenses. So this is a long lens from Polaroid that I use. I've got another wide lens here, which I clip on with a, this is a Manfrotto lens, that I can clip on onto the front of the phone, just to give me a couple of other options. I sometimes use these for time lapses, or if there's a particular shot where I'm in the wrong place. So those go in there. I've also got a microphone in here, that I can clip into my phone. I've got an extension line in my bag here. Again, that can clip on if I'm in a particularly noisy environment like I am here, and I want to get close up, that will just clip it into there. So that's the basic equipment I'm carrying on me at all times. And then on my backpack, I also have a little travel tripod here, which is really nice for being able to do time lapse.
I'd argue you don't really need a tripod if you've got a gimbal. He likes the kit, so he likes to have lots of kit. I like to travel simple.
So this is for doing pieces to camera, for doing nice steady shots of landscapes, etc. That's really an essential piece of equipment. They're quite heavy. You'll also see me occasionally walking into the distance or walking towards the camera. That's a little bit of a fake setup shot where I put the camera on here, open it up, and then do my walk or whatever I have to do. Past it and then back again. I normally look for nice places to do that. So in the bag here, I have my drone. There are three bags that you can get. I think there's a number of bags, but this one is slightly bigger than the small DJI bag. It's a Manfrotto bag, and it allows me to have another compartment here for sandwiches, drinks, and other things, which you don't have on the DJI bag, which is just takes the drone, and it's a little bit more compact. In here, I have lots and lots and lots of batteries. I have 5 batteries.
Yeah, that's the one downside of drones. You only get about 20 minutes flight from the battery, so you need to have spares. And they're quite expensive. They're probably 500 Norwegian crowns to buy a spare, but you need 2 or 3 ideally. I always travel with them. With spares.
In total. I use normally between 4 and 5 batteries on one show, on one walk. So that would be 4 or 5 flights. Normally I think about what I'm going to do and I put it up to see there's more batteries in here. And then the drone, which in this case is DJI Phantom Professional. I'm going to set it up and take it off in a minute.
This video was shot 2 years ago now. So it's a nice kit, but it was expensive and big. This one is being handed around. It's called a Spark, S-P-A-R-K, made by DJI, DJO, and a Chinese company, and they do about 3/4 of all the world's drones. The camera on that is better than the camera on that from 2 years ago. And the new model does 4K. You know what I mean when I talk about 4K television? Called Ultra HD. The new Spark has 4K capacity on the camera, and all that happens is you just basically fire up a drone, make a connection between the remote control and the drone, fire up the DJI app, up goes the drone, you set the altitude, you set the return location, and whatever shows on the camera of the drone appears on here. So if you spot some great pictures, we can just press record. And you record sections of video and then drop them into the editing app, which I will demonstrate in a little while. Really cool, simple, relatively simple to use.
And then the controller that goes with it.
Yeah, well, I love to see the controller is much smaller nowadays. So, really, can fit in your pocket.
people in the office do think that I'm just out there to play with toys and enjoy myself, and I guess there's a little bit of truth in that. I've certainly really enjoyed doing it. It's been a great chance to take a day out each week out of the office, and but it's been surprisingly popular. So you know, sometimes the things where you enjoy yourself just happen to be also the things that work best.
That's the best tip I can give any of you looking for a career. Best tip is make a career out of something you would do for free. So if there's something you would love, you'd love to do, and you do it for free, that probably should be your career. Yeah. So I would happily make Mojo videos for free. So,
well, it's 5 years since I taught at Christiane. Do you use drones in your teaching now when you do the workshop there, or do any of the students have drones?
Yes, yeah, I do, mostly just as I'm doing now to demonstrate what's possible. I haven't gotten to have a budget yet to buy drones the way they buy cameras or audio recorders, but it might happen. They're getting so cheap, relatively cheap.
I have a student in Malmö that I taught 15 years back. He is now full-time doing drone videos, so making quite a good living.
Yeah. I mean, you've got such splendid scenery here. You could do really lovely pictures and so on. I write about wine. I write a weekly wine column. So whenever I go to a wine region, up goes the drone, get some pictures of the vineyards and the winery and people toiling and the trucks driving on the dusty roads. Nice pictures. And most wine people are not very digitally aware. So I now make videos for wineries, wine companies. It's a nice living. And they give me lots of wine to drink. So I can't remember. I'm sure we choose. Every year for the last 3 years there's been an annual Mojo conference in Isle. It's called Mojo Fest, as in Mojo Festival. They have a very impressive Facebook group, so facebook.com/groups Mojo Fest. Almost 5,000 members. There's Evo there. Almost 5,000 members. It's a great resource if you have a question about Mojo. You just type something up here. And so I was asking recently about apps for shooting incognito, undercover type. So when I used to work for the South China Morning Post, I did a lot of stories in Macau. Macau is the world's biggest gambling centre and a site for a lot of money laundering. So I needed some video of casinos, except the security guards at casinos are absolute animals. I see you with a whip out of my mobile phone, they arrive. So I discovered an app called TS Video, Top Secret Video, which allowed me to record, and it looked like I was just reading a book. Unfortunately, the app was no longer upgraded, so I needed a new one. So I put a message on here and got lots of recommendations, including one called Incognito, which I'll show you in a moment. But first, I want to show you the video of Flow Motion. Now, I apologize, it's a bit commercial, but it's a pretty cool piece of kit, and it's available now.
Your smartphone is one of the most powerful cameras ever made, but it's designed to fit in your pocket and almost impossible to hold steady, making your videos look like this. That's why we developed Flow Motion 1, the most versatile smartphone stabilizer. One keeps your phone perfectly steady, so you can capture smooth, shake-free videos, no matter where you are or how you move. Oh, T1 is built on high-precision motors and sensors. And with our custom-built electronics and optimized software, we have fine-tuned and maxed out performance, instantly giving your videos a smooth, cinematic look, right in the palm of your hand. But it's so much more than just a stabilizer. The Flow Motion app is packed with powerful features like autofollow to track any subject.
You can do also, you can set the drone to autofollow, so you can be walking on doing a piece to camera and it stays 2 meters away from you. So it's really cool. As I said, I had no shares in this company. I bought mine through what's it called, crowdfunding. I crowdfunded the project. It's now available, and it's pretty cool.
Epic motion timelines, immersive panoramas, and live streams that are better than ever. The app's pro camera settings, you get even more out of your phone's camera. Control everything from the grip and get the perfect angle with the joystick. And all of this fits in your pocket. Tell your best story anywhere at any time. It's time to put an end to shaky videos.
Hallelujah. Okay, so that's the hardware. Now I'm going to talk to you about the apps, the software. And there's no shortage of apps. I honestly, does anybody know what the current number of apps on the App Store is? It's a big number, but I... Okay, so that's my phone. So there's the native camera app, which is perfectly acceptable camera app. Really good. Apple have put a lot of thought into this. Also, I have no shares in Apple either. Yeah? Just will have no connection with Flow Motion. Apple have never given me a discount on anything. I buy a lot of their kit. So, but the camera's good. It's got a few limitations. So if we go to the filming apps, there are really only two. Filmic Pro, it's about 50 Norwegian crowns roughly, and Mavis, 3 times that price. Filmic Pro is a really quality app. So it's got a settings button here where you can set things like resolution, frame rate, audio rate, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. You only need to do it once. It tells you how much battery you've got and how much memory you've got on your phone. It's also listening to the audio and telling me whether I've got the audio levels right. And you can set white balance and things like that. So it's a really impressive app. 50 Norwegian crowns. Yeah. It's pretty much the industry standard now. However, there's one that's better. I know about Mavis because it was designed It was designed by a PhD student at the university near where I live. And it essentially makes your mobile effectively a broadcast quality serious camera. I'll try one. I don't know what's happening with the...
Take this sound off.
Yeah, it's fine. Just turn the sound down. Right. Let's see if this works. So, it's got all these amazing controls down here. and waveform, it's a serious broadcast quality camera, for about, I'm going to guess, 300 Norwegian crowns. Incredible what you can do with this. Yeah. So it's only just been developed, but it's if you want to get into serious filming, then I'd probably use Mavis or Filmic Pro. Incognito. This is the one that stops it being thrown out of. So it looks like I'm texting somebody. If I type the word record, press send, it looks like someone's chatting with me, but actually I'm recording you guys. I should get permission first, shouldn't I? So that's incognito.
What's the price of
incognito? It's free, but you only get a limited number of seconds of recording. If you pay 60 Norwegian crowns, you get a minute. You pay a bit more, you get a bit more. And a minute should be enough. So 60 Norwegian crowns, £6. It's a pretty cool one. So once you've done your filming, then you want to edit. There are a range of editing apps, but these are really the only three, I think, if you want to be a professional. So iMovie comes with the phone, so you can't beat the price. LumaFusion is as good as Final Cut Pro or Premiere, almost, on a smartphone. And it's, these two are only iOS. TV Master is Android and iOS. But only some Android phones. And also, KineMaster works on a subscription model, so you have to pay a fee per month to use, to lose the watermark. There is a free version that you get watermark, and the resolution is only what's called standard definition, 720p. Video pad's alright, but it only works on an iPad, not an iPhone. The others are okay, but I would stick with these two. I think they're really cool. So, usually when I'm working with students, I use iMovie because the price is good. And it's incredibly incredibly powerful. So these are some of the videos that we were playing with the students. Here's an example of a wine featuring movie. Okay, so opening image with a headline, a map to tell us where we are, and then one of the interesting pieces of research that's happening, this might be worth looking at later, Oscar, is that when people look at video on a mobile phone, very, very high proportion of people kill the sound. In the editor-in-chief of Times of India, which claims to be the biggest online news site in the world, says they do 80 videos a day and they reckon that 90% of their audience kill the sound. So they're only watching, I guess you call them silent movies. So one of the things I teach is that instead of having a voice narration, you have a narration done via subtitles. So this is a wine story, so it's about wine. And the great thing about it, as I mentioned, is it allows you to have what are called cutaways. Sound up. Play a little bit of this. So this is an interview with a winemaker. No. Sorry, there's no speaker, but no sound. So the cutaways give you a show you what he's talking about.
There's some sound in the back. If you increase.
Yeah, I turned it turn it up. Oh, so I didn't turn it up.
She has really a character which you feel in the wine, and particularly for the wines like Vaseline wines.
Are you in love with this one, this queen?
Sometimes even my wife, she says that maybe I care too much about the wine, so I should take care more also about her. But okay, this is like a joke.
And that's a sting that I made with an app that costs about 30 Norwegian crowns called IntroMate, one word, IntroMate, IntroMate. You can actually make stings. So a sting is one way of identifying your organisation, your company, if you are an independent production person. So you can put together a video really, really quickly. I'll show you. So I press the plus button to start a new project. It takes a few seconds to load. I choose create movie. And then all I'm doing is pressing the plus button to add video, photos, or audio that I recorded on the phone. So I press plus. I'll choose some video. A few pieces at random. So literally just I was walking by the river and getting some pictures of pretty Norwegian scenery. So I'll build this up to say a minute. And most videos, as you know, on the web tend to be pretty short. Okay, so I've got almost a minute. One more. So I've got a minute and 2 seconds of a video. Part of the trick, of course, is filming short clips. You know, if you're only going to use a few seconds of a scene, that you don't need to shoot for a minute, you can just shoot a few seconds. So that's my rough cut. You can, you know, with Apple you can always pinch, so I'm going to pinch to shorten it. And okay, so I look through here and I think, actually I quite like that, so it's going to be my opening image. So I just grab it, put my finger and hold it and swing it back to the beginning of the video. And I might want, let's say I want that one there. So it's very easy to move your clips around. So when you're happy with your rough cut of the video, okay, that'll do. I'll drop in my sting at the end. I can edit any of these pieces of video. So let's say this piece here, I tap it, it's 5 seconds long. Let's say I only really want 2.5 seconds of it. So very easy to edit the images. You can see between each clip are things called transitions. So you can, you have a range of slides, wipe, stage, dissolves, if you want to use those sort of things, or you can just go to none at all. So you can play around with transitions. If you want to give your video a title, you tap the title button. Up comes a range of templates, you pick one. day by the river. Okay? And it's autocorrect is not very helpful. By the river. Okay, done. So when the video plays, got a headline. Okay, and now the last stage, I think I want to have some narration. So I choose the plus button again. Oh, sorry, I didn't mention. I can choose this second button if I want to have slow motion, fast or slow. I can do freezes and so forth. The third button relates to the audio of the pictures, and you can play with the audio, adjust the levels, have fades and things. So I can fade the audio in and out. And the last thing is, let's say I want to add some narration. I tap voiceover, and when I'm ready, I press record. It counts me down. Here we are by the, I think it's called the Acker River in beautiful downtown Oslo. And this is my commute to work each morning when I go to Vestedal School. And so I can now either accept it, listen to it, retake it, cancel it. So I can just build up my narration fairly quickly. Add voiceover. Record or so forth. So you very, very fast way to produce a video. So if you were a news journalist, you go to, I don't know, a protest march or some event, you can shoot your video, find a nice comfortable coffee shop that's got good Wi-Fi, sit down, edit your video, and then when you're finished, so let's say we've finished our video. I want the sting to finish a bit sooner so I can shorten it. Yep. Okay, press done. And there's a button here to transcend. So I can now send it to any number of locations. I can save it to my little memory disk. I can send it to Facebook. I can send it to YouTube, Vimeo, Messenger, WhatsApp. A whole lot of possibilities. So it's possible for a reporter in the field, assuming either good Wi-Fi or when we've got 5G coming up in less than 18 months in this country, probably. So you could transmit 4K, big files. This is only, I tend to say these are 1080 rather than 4K, because 4K is a big file. But once you're on the scene, you shoot your video, you do your narration, and bang, you send the video back to your office, your boss, your producer, and you've got something from the scene almost immediately. And the equipment is relatively inexpensive. What's the most likely scenario with this, with media companies, is that the big traditional companies, the BBC and RK, probably won't embrace this too quickly because they've spent so much money with their infrastructure. They've got huge studios and outside broadcast vans and blah, blah, blah. It's the startups, it's the new companies that will look at this and say, hey, I can do broadcast television for a fraction of the cost of what NRK is spending. And once you've got, and then, of course, depending on your business model, do you sell advertising around it, do you get your programming sponsored by a product, up to you. The business model is a separate story, a separate discussion. but the equipment allows you to do high quality stuff pretty cheaply. Add some footage from your drone from the protest march, and you've got a pretty interesting package for almost minimal cost, just the salary of one reporter. Anyway, that's what I advocate. I tried to sell this story to the Silver's Project, to Shanghai TV, a few years ago, and they listened with great interest and said, this is absolutely fascinating, but we're not going to take it on, because we've just spent X number of million buying a new studio, new cameras, and new trucks and so on. We'd look very foolish if we went to the Mojo room. But for a startup, I think you might find it a different scenario. So that's the editing process. There are lots of other cool apps that you can use for having animated GIFs to do the headlines, make the headlines spin around. One of the really cool ones that I like is if you're really, really in a hurry and you want to subtitle your story, say I want to subtitle this piece of video, I've got the option of typing my text. What's much more interesting is that I press the record button. Here we are by the river. It's a sunny day. End of blah blah blah. And I've got my script as a subtitle. You will need to check it. Oops. You'll need obviously to edit it and control yourself from talking too much. But you can do a silent movie this way with a subtitled script really, really quickly, because the voice recognition is so good. So I think time for questions, or time for a discussion. I could keep talking about apps for a long, long time.
Yes, thank you, Stephen. Within a short day, I'd like to give the floor to all of you and start the growth again. I just wanted to add a brief note prior to our discussion to set the context of what you are saying into the perspective of established news media companies, and you've been working with a lot of them, and I want to give an example from a Swedish news media company that you're currently studying, and it's a local news media company called Mittmedia, who owns and runs 28 independent newspaper titles in the mid to north of Sweden, and this company are really experimenting with how to work with different digital media technologies. And one of the things that they have done has involved to have their own journalists train themselves in Mojo. So they didn't have access to Steven, but some of them were quite good in working with iPhones and to broadcast. And they've been working on this for a couple of years, and they now proudly present themselves as having 570 Mojos. So they have 570 journalists across the 28 titles, saying that they all can work with Mojo. And they recently won an award, I think it was by One Infra, for being the best in mobile journalism. And the way they work, essentially, is to encourage everyone to work with the Mojo when going into the field. But they do acknowledge that you need some editing and some creation. Sometimes it's difficult for one independent reporter to do everything themselves. So adding to what you've said, from a newsroom perspective, these journalists go into the field, usually using their headphone, being connected to the news editor at the local title, and then using Slack, they connect with a team of Mojo editors and reporters that work, they have six in total, and they work in teams of two. So they will provide support
to the module going into the field. So, for instance, if there's a big accident in Westeros, a module will go to the accident, but using a headphone to get information so they know what questions to ask to the rescue people at the site and so forth, and then they can quickly move from being in the field to having the, and typically they have young, beautiful people working in front of the camera in the newsroom, so they will switch from being in the field to being in the newsroom and giving a reported story, and they will quickly edit it to look like television, but they, at the same time, they say that this is not broadcast. We are allowed to experiment with the format. And quite importantly, you've heard Stephen say here that among the benefits are involved are to cut costs and the economies of scale, and that this is the way to approach it. What they are doing, besides the fact to encourage everyone, and we can honestly say not all journalists are comfortable in doing this. They force journalists to do it. Some really do not appreciate being in front of their own mobile device and filming. Some do. The organization appreciates those who do good mojo. But what they've been finding is that there is a lot of not only traffic, because traffic is not the most important measure in our life, it's time spent with the video material on the sites is really important for converting people into paying for the news. So they find that by putting video behind the paywall, they find a high conversion rate, so people start subscribing to content because they can really attract audiences to go onto the site, and this is crucially important for news media companies that are struggling with their revenues from advertising. And I just wanted to add that point because we're seeing a number of companies that are trying to work with this, and I would be curious for us to have a discussion not only about the role from an individual perspective but from the newsroom and also in a sort of genre perspective. What is mobile journalism? What are the boundaries? And professionalism contra the more authentic out to be there presence, which is also very important in small. Having said that, I'd like to reintroduce Rob and Geir and see whatever comments or questions you may have to Stephen about this. Ethics, innovation, or
I can start for that. Sort of more interested in this is a really good introduction to the mobile media journalism, but I'm interested in seeing what can we do when we how is the young kids or young adults in here, so kids in the
thanks.
Young people. So how we can sort of mix this knowledge that Stephen shares with us with the way the younger people use, you know, Instagram, Snapchat, the newer way of communicating. And it's like I've always been complaining about the journalism schools that they sort of destroy everything you knew before you came here to teach you something from the old days. Anyway. So that's it. So I'd like to see what Stephen has taught us now, mixed with the way you use your phone to make like Snapchat stories or how you communicate with your friends. I mean, making this merge into something bigger and finer and more interesting than we've ever seen before. So that sort of is more like challenge to you to come up with some good ideas instead of us showing you how. How we'd like you to do it. That's I've been working with you a bit, done a bit of training together with one of Stephen's friends, Ivo, and we did train 100 people in Myanmar, Burma. Some of them former political prisoners. They had never seen anything like a smartphone sort of before they came into the first day of training, and on the second day of training made some fantastic stories about their own lives, and sort of gave them a possibility. They gave them a voice, and then of course they could share the videos soon on Facebook and all. So it's a game. I like the way that we can give power to people that didn't have the possibility to tell stories. And then I'd like you, that's it, to come up with some new ideas to do this even more interesting. I mean, mixing the traditional way of making TV just with new and small equipment into something interesting. That's up to you.
I'll just say something. I think this is really something that I used to work with Adrasa Wisman in Trondheim. I ran a media lab there. And we did a lot of training with journalists some years ago on how to use smartphones and also drones into their journalism. So they are actually practicing with some of this today. And I think that what you have told us today is a reminder of the new visual possibilities that this technology is really offering us. And I think apart from the technology, more interesting things there is what kind of storytelling are we actually moving into? And that is part of the question from Gay here as well. Because in traditional journalism, pictures has always been important. Even the days before we had photographers, I mean, they made sketches and they had maps, and then they are making pictures. Now we have live pictures and we have it in real time. So this is kind of another step in this development that we will need for some time. Surely, I think we also, this is early days. And I would like to ask you about what you know about the coming regulations, especially in the EU area, because I know that there are regulations coming up where to use this technology and how to use it.
Yeah. I can't answer anything about the EU regulations. I just don't know. Hey, also, you got any information about the EU?
Yeah, there is a proposal on drones, but it's not anywhere close to being passed at the moment, so, because governments don't want it to be a federal matter, they want it to be a national matter. So, mm-hmm. So it still varies between the countries. Yeah.
A lot of countries in Europe, I know, are developing apps that tell you where you can fly a drone. I mean, you go to Spain, you load the app for the, it tells you you can fly a drone over this area, but not this area. So that's the only thing I know in terms of apps that are being developed. And every country seems to have different regulations with drones. I got arrested in a national park in England last year because I was flying a drone there. And I genuinely was ignorant. I didn't know. Luckily, I had a young 12-year-old boy with big, sad eyes. And when the ranger said, "I should confiscate your drone and arrest you, but I'll just give you a warning," and the kid was almost in tears. I think that managed to get. I got away with it, but I didn't go back. So I've learned my lesson. Learned the rules. And know where you can and cannot fly a drone.
Sorry, what was the regulation? Why couldn't you?
You are forbidden to fly a drone in a national park in England. Full stop. And the simple rules are you cannot fly within 50 metres of a vehicle, a building, or a person. Which does limit what's possible. Yeah?
I just want to add that here in Oslo it's very strict. In the city centre, you can hardly fly a drone.
Yes, I know there's a couple of regulations in Norway that, for example, you need a license, of course, and there are different regulations flying, I think it's 50 meters away from people, but closer than that, you're not allowed.
But in the city center, you're not allowed.
Yeah, and also there's not allowed to fly a drone close to military structures, mm-hmm. and in airspace, For example, there was a case where some people flew a drone close to a forest fire and obstructed the fire helicopters, and that was the case. And also, it's for media companies. You have if you do something that is not allowed with a drone, you can get a. This company isn't allowed to use drone for 2 years, I think, if you overstep the rules.
I can tell you, I can talk more about Asia than I can about Europe. I spend a little more time in Asia. Late last year, the bridge between Hong Kong, Zhuhai, and China, it's the world's longest bridge, and there were rumours going around that there were problems with the bridge, with the foundations. The Chinese government wouldn't say anything. So my friend, you saw DJ, got a drone and flew it out and got footage of the suspect foundations. And they ran a story about that, which caused a big problem for the company that was building the bridge. And he said they couldn't have done the story any other way apart from using a drone, because there was no way they would allow a reporter in. So there are potential for stories anyway.
I have a website called dronetravel.com which has like relations in there.
What does it call, sir?
Drone travel.
Oh. Okay.
I think that aside from talking about the restrictions, we should also take into account the work is done, how to use this. And in Arcadia in Norway, like you said, they have the air department, the air photo department, and I think that most of us have been looking at some of their work this summer, because they have these mountain travel programs in the summertime, and they did a lot of experiments with the drones that they had four or five weeks where people were walking around in the mountains. And they use a lot of drone photos there. And I know also that AMK is particularly interested in working out technology, making it, if there is something wrong with the drones, if you lose contact with them, they should be automatically going back to their home base, to a base defined on the format. Basically, media companies, we don't want regulations that can stop us from taking photographs. We want the decisions to be taken in the editing room, and not on the site, because that is very close to censorships. So all these regulations saying you are not allowed to do that, and that is something that we usually oppose, are opposed to. I should also say, think that you're saying that traditional media companies would have investments preventing them from using this technology. Actually, if you go again in Oslo, the VG, one of the things that they did when they started their TV productions, they used Mojo, really, on a big scale. And also TV2 in Berlin, which is the most successful company when it comes to spin-offs, have been spinning off companies that are using the new technology. So it's not only startups, it's also other companies.
I'm not even sitting here, I don't know. I can't tell you much of what's happening in Norway. I know in China there are companies now using drones to deliver packages to remote villages, which is kind of cool.
Let me ask openly to the students here. If you envision yourself becoming a future entrepreneur or starting a firm next, besides your studies here, and starting with Mojo and drones, what questions, Mark, do you have to become successful? You have learned here from Stephen basic foundations and how you could invest 10,000 kroner in equipment. But what would you want to know besides all the details of starting a firm, how you would get started? Can I take the opportunity to ask him? He is truly an entrepreneur.
I think what I wonder if it's better to like if you produce some videos and you do it well, is it smart to publish it on YouTube or Vimeo or stuff like that, or would you go directly to a news firm or a TV company to try to sell your stuff?
Yeah. I try to keep it as exclusive as possible and sell it. But that means having connections, knowing who to go to sell the stories. If I were your age, what I would do, and it helps if you've got language skills, I would get together with a couple of friends and go somewhere interesting, like Myanmar, where Gero's been. And you could set up a small team of people producing content about Myanmar for media companies all around the world. Well, actually, the best one would probably be North Korea, because most organizations, media organizations, would really like to have some images and video from North Korea, if you can do it. You might have to be on the border of China and fly a drone across the border. It's just a thought. Now, if you want an adventure and you want something on your CV, pick a remote part of the world. It might be a poor part of the world where you can sell one or two stories for $100, but that'll pay your rent for the next 2 weeks. You know, there are countries in the world where rent and food is really cheap. That's what I would do if I were a young man. So I suggest it to you as a possibility. But the gear is so relatively cheap that you can set yourself up with a couple of friends as a production house and make a program. It could be drone videos, it could be stories of human interest. Okay. I'm personally just focusing on wine because I like wine. And I think you do need to find a niche. I think the generalist reporter is less likely to be rewarded than a specialist. If you can specialise in some part, some focus on, it might be, you know, humanitarian stories, or it might be, you choose. Pick a niche, become a specialist. That seems to make a big difference in terms of your hireability. Are you excited by the possibility of what some of these tools give you? I think you are. I wish I were your graduate. I'm only slightly older, but my bones were creaking walking up the steps, so that's not even something.
I thought about, there's a lot of interest groups where you can apply for money in Norway, so you can, because it's so cheap, you can probably apply to get money to get your equipment from there and then start to play around.
Yes. Yeah. I will give you one really good piece of advice. When I was with the South China Morning Post, they have the best internship, I think, of any media company in the world, in terms of they take 10 people every summer for 6 weeks. They pay your airfare to Hong Kong. They provide accommodation. And they give you a salary. And roughly 3, 4, sometimes 5 of those 10 people get offered a job at the end of the summer. It's a great program. Unfortunately, there's 1,000-plus applicants every year. I know this because my job when I was there, the editor chief said, "Here." And he put 1,000 applications down in front of me and said, "Pick the 50 best and I'll pick the 10 from those 50. So I spent weeks going through and I was looking for any excuse to reject. Any excuse. Spelling mistake, wrong punctuation, anything, just to get rid of these applications, because they're all so good. It only applies, you've got to be a final year student. Then they only will take final year students. But it's a brilliant program. As I said, it's got to be one of the best in the world in terms of what they do for you.
And to sum up,
if the applicant would have been this Dane doing the video on the
moment. Exactly. If you've got a USP, if you've got something special, let's say you speak five languages, let's say you're an expert in microeconomics, and there's something that gives you an edge, that's what makes the difference. And practical experience. We don't care about grades. Sorry, I shouldn't say this, but as long as you pass, yes. Whether you've got A's, B's, C's, not important. It's proof that you can do the job. Having stories, print stories published, producing podcasts, making videos, flying a drone, anything that proves you can do the job is more relevant, certainly for the South China Morning Post, than your academic grades. That was one thing that was made very clear to me. I want people who can do the job, who are ready to start when they walk in the door. So that I tell students that it's not so much it's about what you can do, not what you can say.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Thank you for having you and learning about the practical insights from your diverse experiences. And I'm sure Stephen will answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, I'll put mine. I'll take the shots up. Yeah, so.
And we have made a video recording that we will publish on the site. So if you want to go back and look at some of those examples or advise your fellow students who didn't have the time to come.